Welcome to the politicalbetting.com polling matters show. My name is Kieran Pedley. Well, for those of you that are bored of Brexit, we're going to be doing something a little bit differently today. We're going to be looking at events across the pond. But the regular viewers of the show will know that we've been going back and forth looking at events here and events in America. And today we're going to be focusing on the US presidential race. Last night surely was a historic one in US political history. The Democrats chose their first female nominee for president. But what of November? Now we face a Clinton versus Trump race. Who's actually going to win? And what should we be looking out for as the campaign approaches? Also, the all-important running mates will be chosen soon. Who should we be looking out for in the VP race? And what impact might that have on the campaign? I'm joined by some people who know much more about this stuff than me. Our regular contributor, Rob Vance from Penshone and Berland.
Good to be here, Karen.
And I'm also joined by John Christopher Buer. He writes, John Christopher is a White House correspondent and US political analyst, regularly attending White House daily briefings and press conferences. He writes opinion pieces for the Huffington Post UK and also served in the Clinton administration in three federal agencies as communications director. JC, welcome to the show.
What a pleasure to be here in person and so close to my hotel.
Well, you were so popular. You're so popular after our event over the phone that we thought we'd get you here in the flesh.
It's been great. I just came back from Belgium and it's been nonstop interviews with from here in London. And there's a lot of concern about what is going on. I just wrote a piece, as you mentioned, I do blogs for Huffington Post UK, and the last one is, it just went up today. It says, Hillary versus the Donald, what is going on in America? And there's a real concern, not only in Great Britain, but in throughout Europe, that Donald Trump may in fact be president. And the only alternative, Karen, is Hillary Clinton. And out of 320 million people, they're asking me, because we have a lot of yanks. Mm. Is that the best you've got to offer? And it's been a very interesting time. And we're going to have quite an election coming up.
It was a historic moment last night, though, of course, you know, Hillary Clinton being the first female nominee for president. I mean, you know, what's your sense of her candidacy and, you know, how she might do in November?
Well, it's brilliant. I mean, she's extremely bright. She's very, very competent. And she did almost got it in 2008. But this guy named Barack Obama sort of put the fire out for her, but then he did the right thing, like Abraham Lincoln, team of rivals. Rob's nodding his head, and I think he knows what I'm saying. Instead of having to compete with Hillary, he made her his Secretary of State. How smart. And he put her off for a while, but she's back, and she's going to be going head-to-head with the Donald.
I'll come to Rob in a moment on the polling, but Bernie Sanders is an interesting candidate, isn't he? I know we spoke about him last time you were on the show. I mean, what's he thinking about sort of staying in the race? I mean, normally you'd expect a candidate maybe to drop out at this stage, wouldn't you? It certainly happened on the Republican side, but he seems determined to go to the convention.
He wants to go to the convention. He's got a huge amount of support. He's a very populist, one would say liberal. Trump calls him a lefty or a red, whatever, red baiting in America. Would never imagine that would ever come up again. And the fact is, he's got enormous amount of support. And I don't know if this is breaking news or not, but on Thursday of this week, he's meeting President Obama at the Oval Office to discuss how the party can benefit from the kinds of positions that he's put forth and he would like to see in the Democratic platform during the convention in July.
I think I was listening to the 538 podcast, and I'm sure people that watch the show and listen to the show will also look at, and they were talking about Bernie Sanders maybe being a sort of Ted Kennedy-like figure in the party in the future, maybe sort of the elder statesman, if you like. I mean, is that a role that you can sort of see him playing?
I don't see him at all like Ted Kennedy. I mean, I knew Ted Kennedy. I can't say he was a friend of mine. He was a neighbor of mine. And I knew I had worked on Bobby Kennedy's campaign. I actually met JFK when I was a wee lad. But I don't see a Kennedy connection at all. But I do see a curmudgeon-y, cool kind of granddad that the youngsters, the millennials, love. Because he's offering them something that Hillary is not, a revolution. And they're all in debt. They've got bills and college loans out. And he's offering them something new. And it's very appealing. And Hillary is hard for them to relate to because she's a little older, and not older than Bernie, but there's some that granddad thing. It's very, very appealing to young people who find that he has their voice, which is very interesting.
We have a similar dynamic here with Jeremy Corbyn, I suppose. Yes. Rob, I'll bring you in on some of the polling. I mean, there's two things we were talking about off-air, which was that the race seemed to be narrowing slightly in terms of a hypothetical Trump versus Clinton race in the recent past, although I think it's gone back out again. Good to get your thoughts on that. But also, I think we've got some data on the favourability ratings of each of the candidates. Now, the Huffington Post on pollster.com, they have this really good, neat site which has a look at, you know, takes all the polls and averages them together. I think we've got a slide here which looks at those at polling averages. I'll read them out for those listening in. Donald Trump favourability ratings, 37% favourable, 58% unfavourable. Again, this is a average, so different polls will have different ratings. Hillary Clinton, 41% favourable, 56% unfavourable. So not a lot of differences there. So I'd be interested to get some of your thoughts on these two candidates' popularity and maybe where what the horse race polls can tell us at this stage.
Yeah, and I think the favourability scores point to two really important truths about this election. One, which is, I'd say, relatively speaking, both candidates are better known by the majority of the American population than any two other candidates probably in the history of, certainly in modern political campaigns, right?
Absolutely.
In terms of, like, there wasn't a lot of this, I mean, Hillary Clinton has been in the media spotlight since the early 90s. There isn't a lot of negatives about Hillary that's about to come out. I mean, Trump will have a whole team of people working on the negatives and digging up stuff, but I would be extraordinarily surprised if some huge, massive scandal was about to be, you know, brought to light by someone in the Trump campaign that hasn't been covered at some point in time in the media. That's not to say that they won't focus on things that have already been covered in the media, but there's not a lot of new stuff that's going to be out there. There's a lot of negatives already priced into Hillary, and you can see that there. The same thing really is true of Trump. What I think is interesting is about their own party's favourability ratings for them. You know, we've seen interview after interview in the last few weeks of Democrats who are supporting Bernie Sanders, or at least Democrats in terms of voting in the Democratic primary, whether they were, you know, Democrats in you know, card-carrying Democrats a year ago is, like Bernie Sanders, a question. But, you know, lots of them saying that they would never vote for Hillary, and they don't care that Trump is the nominee and that Trump might win. Now,
Supporters saying the same thing about President Obama.
Of course, but the point is Hillary, same time 8 years ago, endorsed Obama in the same way that Obama will probably next week, and I suspect in some way Sanders will row back from his thing to some extent over the course of the next few weeks. Once he's met with Obama, got his seat at the convention, got some of his bits of agenda out there and has decided what he wants out of this process, I think in reality he knows that in the long run he would rather be responsible for bringing a set of progressive ideas into the Democratic Party platform rather than for giving the presidency to Donald Trump, no matter what some of his enthusiastic supporters might say. But Trump has got the same challenge of reuniting his party, lots of whom, whether they're fiscal conservatives who are worried about his, like, spending plans, or whether they're social conservatives who are worried about his, you know, let's face it, somewhat New York liberal pronouncements in the past, motivating that base to get out and actually do the hard work of, you know, getting him elected and then voting is a challenge. And so it's the favourability ratings within their own parties that in a sense will tell us more than this, which just says both candidates are, you know, a majority of the population has a negative view of both candidates.
I mean, Jason, you've worked on your Fair Few campaigns and covered your Fair Few campaigns. I mean, how difficult is it to shift opinions of candidates that are so well known like this? And presumably it's virtually impossible.
Well, I have to agree with Rob on one thing, and I kind of want
just
to
one.
put him to the test on another thing. They are extremely well known. I mean, they've got what we say in the real estate business, curb appeal. People know them from a mile away. Everybody knows them. That's good and that's bad. What Bernie Sanders needs to do for Hillary is what she did for Barack Obama. And I was at Sky News doing a live when we had one of our guys in Washington when she conceded and gave it up. It was quite an impressive day. Bernie has to come out and give her a full throttle endorsement. He must do that to save her and to save the party. Will he? I don't know. Now, I know we're going to talk about VPs, but I wanted to just project this. If she chooses a vice president that is Bernie-like, or is leftist, or a liberal, or very progressive, it will turn the Bernie people off because they will say she's pandering to us because she wants to get us.
And patronizing.
That's very patronizing and pandering. And the Bernie people are so ideological. And we talked about This is another part. It's an interesting discussion. Bernie people might go for Hillary if Bernie says do it, or they might stay home. Mm. Or they might say, Bernie, run as a third party. Or they might want to get someone else. And he's going to go to Philadelphia if he doesn't concede with a lot of power. Now, she needs to choose somebody who can get the Trump people off the fence. Because as Rob knows, elections in America are won by the swing voters, they're won by the independent, they're won by the noncommittal. But when you get in that polling booth and you think, wait a minute, am I really going to vote for Donald Trump? Come on. Well, why would I vote for Hillary? You know, she's this, she's strident, she's got baggage. Who knows what's going to come out after the, you know, when she's in the White House, dreadful things. Who knows? It could be, maybe not. Hopefully for her, there isn't. But the fact is that the Trump people, the people going to vote for Trump that might go for Hillary, because as we said earlier, basically they're entrenched. I'm Hillary, there's no way I could go for Trump. I am a Trump, there's no way I could go for Hillary. That kind of a thing. Mm. But the people who think, well, wait a minute, let me take a longer look. They're not going to vote for Hillary if Elizabeth Warren is her running mate. But they might vote for Hillary if something interesting and exciting and somewhat bizarre, like John Kasich might join, switch parties. You never know. These kinds of things make it exciting. Look what Senator McCain tried to do in the summer of 2008. He brought in Sarah Palin, right? No one knew who the heck she was, but she was exciting. She stimulated his rather dreadfully boring campaign, and everybody in the world was talking about Sarah Palin until, you know, Tina Fey started doing imitations of her and buried her. But basically, that's what Hillary needs, excitement, and Trump needs to bring someone in who is very polished, who actually has done something in government, whether it's a governor, a senator, or a member of Congress, who actually has some experience and will make him look like not such an oddball.
Mm. Let's come back to the vice presidential picks.
I didn't mean to segue right into that.
Curious to get both of your thoughts on who that might be in a moment. But before we do, let's talk a bit about the Donald. We haven't talked about him too much yet on this show. Stands to reason, common sense, that, you know, Donald Trump is going to have to look at the electoral map from 2012 and think, okay, Mitt Romney lost, obviously. So what are the states that Mitt Romney lost that I could potentially win? And I think we've got the map, the electoral map up here. For those listening in, we'll tweet this out. But the Electoral College result in 2012 was 332 to the president and 206 to Mitt Romney. And on the right-hand side, we've got, you know, the map from that time and which states went blue and red and how many Electoral College votes they've got. Now, I guess the acid test, Rob, is which of those states in the blue column can Donald Trump theoretically move into the red column, you know, assuming he holds all of the reds that are already there. I mean, looking at the Electoral College, where does Trump target?
So I think the places that Trump will target are what's somewhat erroneously described still as the Rust Belt would be the first priority. So the phrase Reagan Democrats, but you know, you've got working class blue collar workers, so relatively socially conservative, often working or formerly working in industries that aren't doing so well. Big challenge on trade, those kind of things. A big part of his campaign has been about that. So they're you know, concentrated in places like Ohio, Michigan, bits of Pennsylvania. I mean, those three states are traditional swing states anyway. And there is that sort of overlap of, you know, what we call, like, the kind of people that actually in lots of cases in the UK we sort of talk about as left behind, UKIP, you know, the Goodwin kind of thing. There is an analogy there in terms of the kinds of votes that pick up. So that's three pretty substantial states that are often quite, as we might say, swingy anyway in sort of normal circumstances that Trump will definitely be targeting. I'd say that was probably the first tranche. But then you've also got some...
I think that would take him to 260 if he was to take all of those. I was doing back of the pencil arithmetic.
I'm impressed.
But then also you've got some other big states that are like you might not naturally think of as being in play, that suddenly start looking slightly interesting. So like Wisconsin has had some, you know, it could also be put into that column of, deindustrializing state that has had a Republican governor in the past few years. And so, you know, might be ripe for Trump as well. Florida, always a swing state. There's every reason to think.
I was going to ask about Florida, though, because I guess,
you know, you've got two dynamics there. So you've got
the Hispanic dynamic, haven't you? Which is Trump's favorability ratings there are abysmal. Sure. I mean, do we think Florida's in play in this election? Sure. It's always in play.
But yeah, but then you've also got an old population that's nostalgic and voted for Reagan and all the rest of it. So you've got those kind of two things balancing each other out. And so you start to have an electoral map that, you know, on a certain kind of scenario, starts looking like you can start seeing why it's more complicated than it might seem.
Mm. JC, I'll bring you back in here. Let's dissect this a little bit. I mean, as I say, common sense says that they've got to move some blue states red from 2012. I mean, do you agree with Rob's analysis? I mean, are there any specific states that if you're in Team Trump, you think I've got to win those?
Well, Trump has no ground game at the moment. He doesn't seem to need one. He's got more free media time than anyone. If you calculate it, you can see that. And the most expensive media markets are in California and New York. And I think he can use that. He can use his bravura. He can use his stagecraft. His ability to attract the media. Unlike Hillary, she doesn't have that power anymore. I'm sorry. I would even wager a guess that California may be in play. I think Trump could actually, and I'll go along with Rob, with the Rust Belt and the disenfranchised and the dissatisfied Obama voters. Think about it. Hillary is running on the traditional Obama ticket. Okay, it would be like, and Trump's already saying it, it's Obama's third term. If Trump can go into those states and get into those markets, even New York, I mean, as liberal as New York is, or New Jersey, where Hillary wiped the floor up with Bernie last night, he can change the electoral map for some time. Mm. And I think he has the ability to do that. I think Florida, I worked on the Gore campaign. I was in Nashville on election night, and the Florida Chads and all of that stuff was just devastating to us. Florida, look, first of all, Clinton did not help Gore. He did not go into his state. He could have helped him. Gore was actually
a Gore decision rather than a Clinton decision.
It was an absolute Gore decision. Gore would have nothing to do with Big Bill. He didn't even go to his own state with him. My God, I mean, it was appalling. That he should never have lost. I'm going back, but it's a little history for a point. It's my professor hat at Georgetown and Sarah. The fact is, he should never have lost his own state, and he should never have lost his neighboring state of Arkansas, but he did not want Bill with him for whatever reason. Maybe because of his relationship, Monica Lewinsky, and Gore's a straight arrow. Well, he was. Now he's got, we'll leave him alone. He's divorced and all that. He's living a regular, normal life, I guess we could say.
He's saving the world, right?
And he's saving the world. But Florida is, I agree with Rob, Florida has a very interesting demographic and dynamic. You've got, and Obama just went to Cuba for whatever reason, I'm sure he knows, opening relations up, and selling arms possibly to Vietnam, which is another interesting part of the Obama legacy. Hillary has to cope with that. She's got to deal with that. But there's an interesting Latino areas in Florida. Miami, obviously, the Cuban folks, now the grandchildren. And the I-4 corridor in Orlando, the Puerto Rican element, interesting. And all Latinos are not the same. And unlike what a lot of people say, wrongly, including Mr. Trump when he opens his big mouth, they're not, and they're so different. And there's another element in Florida, and we call them the snowbirds. The people who live in Connecticut and New York, they come down to the East Coast, the Atlantic coast of Florida. They vote there, okay? They are retirees. And those who come to the Tampa part, the other side, the Gulf Coast, are from the Midwest, and they've got plenty of dough, and they vote. So Florida is always a fascinating, fascinating state. And I think that's up in the air. California, my God, that would be amazing. I agree with Rob on the Rust Belt. You could Ohio for sure, Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois. No, it's not. That's so Democrat. Iowa, very, very interesting. And Wisconsin and Minnesota, probably not. It's pretty Dem. But it's going to be very interesting to see. And remember, Trump does not have a ground game that Obama had, which we were talking about earlier, which is phenomenal. And Hillary has one that is absolutely phenomenal.
And it's unified in a way.
And it's very unified.
And so it's the same, large chunks of the same team in both 2008 and 2012. So, you know, Robbie Mook and Joel Benenson and a whole bunch of people who've
you
been
fall
doing
over
this a long
people
time.
You know. I mean, I fall over people I worked on the Clinton campaign in 92. Mm. They're still doing this stuff for Hillary. And they're there for her. And we talk about entrenchment. The Hillary people, 90% will never even think about going for Trump, and the Trump people on the same way with Hillary.
But I think it's interesting that we talk about which states it is that Trump could potentially take off from the column that Obama won in 2012. But on the flip side, Hillary, particularly with certain kinds of VP picks, could potentially put states that haven't been in the Democratic.
That's one of the things I was about to raise. But you know, this assumes that all the Romney states go Trump, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so Texas, I mean, has been trend. You know, we talk about the fastest growing group of people in the states is Latino Hispanics, and that's more true in Texas than it is almost anywhere else.
Texas isn't going blue. Come on.
Well, you know, you see the trend in terms of, you know, we should, you know, there's the Democratic Party in Texas is strong in local areas, and demographics favour them. Maybe not in this election, but certainly the trend over time is that Texas is much more competitive at a statewide level within the next decade, for sure. And Trump's a lack of popularity with a really, really key and growing demographic in the state, you know, and a certain kind of pick that Hillary could potentially make. Texas suddenly is like, and suddenly, like, Texas even looks close, then Republicans are committing resources to defending Texas, which, let's face it, I think it's fair to say that in the same way that Democrats will find it very difficult to win without California, Republicans will find it nearly impossible to win without Texas. Suddenly the whole ground game shifts. Georgia, again, another state which, you know, has demographics which favour the Democrats in the long run, states that Obama actually lost in 2012 but won in 2008, so North Carolina, again, comes back into
the
column.
It's fascinating, and Rob, if you don't mind, I'm watching the Romney South.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget LBJ, that famous, there goes the South.
Yeah, right.
I mean, and there, I forgot how solidly the Republicans won. The entire, I mean, look at that, all the way
but
up.
Again,
to
relatively recent.
But I mean, not Virginia, but South Carolina, North Carolina, my goodness.
But isn't there
but
a risk?
But, you know, Arkansas, I mean, let's not face it, I mean, Hillary Clinton lived in Arkansas for 15, best part of 15 years. I mean, I don't know, I haven't seen any polling, but is Arkansas back on the table again?
Something to look out for.
Missouri has a Democratic governor, again, something to think about in terms of VP picks.
But isn't there a risk that Donald Trump, we talked about, JC mentioned a valid point about the ground game. I mean, isn't there a risk that if Donald Trump thinks he's going to start flipping California and New York, he ends up not actually focusing on the states that he can win, and he ends up getting wiped out on the
But,
on
but
the,
don't
on
forget,
the
this is a coordinated campaign effort. The RNC's got plenty of dough, and they are now made.
But it's defending 23 Senate seats.
Right, I know that. But down ballot, although the Senate's not really down ballot, are key, certainly. And so are, as your audience may know or may not know, the key to winning the apportionment, the way things are gerrymandered, the way the American voting system is cut up into who gets what and how neighborhoods are literally cut in half, that's up to the state legislatures. And I think that the Democrats have lost a lot. Am I correct, Rob, in that? And I think they need to get that back as well. Now, with Hillary on top, the down ballot, how does it affect the locals, like the councilmen's council seats? How does that affect it if Trump's on top? Trump has such excited the electorate so much. I mean, some find him appealing, as I wrote in my latest Huffington Post blog. Some find him appealing, and some find what he says very appalling. Mm-hmm. But they are in on it. They are watching it. They know about it. They love him or they hate him, but you can't avoid him.
Yeah.
And it's a great amount of power that he has. Now, Hillary, on the other hand, people are saying, do I really want to see her again for the next 4 years? I mean, haven't we had enough Clintons? I mean, there's a philosophy there. And how good is Bill Clinton to bring out? Is he a great campaigner? Yeah, sort of. He hurt her in South Carolina back in 2008. Making some comments about Obama that were not very delicate. And then you remember his baggage, or he's a plus, he's a minus. But she has to speak, and she has to perform, because this is a performance, under the shadow of Bill Clinton, although a lot of people think that if they get Hillary, as he said back in 92, if you get me, you get both of us. If you get her, you're going to get Bill, but are you really? And what is his role? This is all going to play out. And what's fascinating to me, as I know you had your first ever live TV debates in leader debates back in 2010, which I was very involved with, especially getting it to America, because America was really, really, really interested in it. C-SPAN did it live. It was fascinating. Is that he is going to be on the stage with her. Now, he can smear her. That's a schmear her or whatever. I'm from Queens, New York. Trump lived a mile away from me. I know these kind of guys. My father would have called him a blowhard. I mean, he is. That's what he is. But he also appeals. Archie Bunker is from Queens, okay? Tony Bennett is from Queens. It's kind of a tough guy. He's on stage with her, next to her. It's going to be tough for her because she has to keep her dignity, and she's getting tough. But he doesn't care what he says. He does not care. It's going to be some vicious, vicious debates, and there's going to be three of them.
That's going to be interesting because people will look at that temperament. He's got to play that correctly, though, hasn't he? Because if they think he's shrill and doesn't have the temperament to be the president, then that can work against him potentially. But hold that thought, though. I want to go back to what we were talking earlier about the vice presidential picks. I know that some of the people that listen to the show and watch the show like a bit of a flutter, you know. And I guess one of the areas you might be able to make a killing is on the vice presidential picks, because I think the odds are quite narrow on Clinton versus Trump and who's going to win. Vice presidential picks, unless we're in the minds of the candidates, it's quite hard to know for sure. I mean, Rob, I'll bring you in on this. Now, we've got we've got the Ladbrokes odds. Now, it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on to what extent the odds are even relevant. But the favourites on the Democrat side are Julian Castro, Tim Kaine and Elizabeth Warren. Let's start with the Democrats. I mean, which of those interest you and maybe some of the others to watch?
So Julian Castro, former mayor of San Antonio in Texas, currently, I think, Secretary of HUD, So Housing and Urban Development, an Obama appointee, young, dynamic, and as the name might suggest...
And a twin.
That's right, yes. His brother's senior in some...
He's a member of Congress,
Tim Kaine is the current sitting governor of Virginia, right?
My good friend and former colleague, Terry McAuliffe.
Who's also sometimes mentioned as a VP.
In fact, I asked Terry McAuliffe at a briefing. He came in to do the governor's thing, and I've known Terry for years. I said, I have a question for Governor McAuliffe. I said, what are the chances of you being Hillary's running mate? And he's a very smart guy. He said, why would I give up the greatest job in the world? He
good
said,
answer.
Thomas Jefferson was the governor of Virginia. Now, this one was the governor of Virginia. He was so slick. I think he would be a dynamic...
Jefferson was also VP, but yeah.
A little thing like that. He deflected it in such a really pretty cool way. But he's so connected to the Clintons, all the way back to all sorts of stuff, that he wouldn't do it. But that kind of charisma. And also, if I might just quickly interject, you can't get someone with too much charisma because they'll say... Remember when Lloyd Benson was the vice president and the vice presidential candidate, when Dukakis was the presidential candidate, and everyone was saying, shouldn't it be reversed? Shouldn't Benson really be the president, running for president? A smart Texas move.
I mean, John Edwards as well. I know that obviously events took place.
Events, indeed.
But you know, 2004, a lot of people were saying that the John Kerry-Edwards ticket was the wrong way around. I mean, I know, JC, you're skeptical about Elizabeth Warren. I don't want to get Rob's thoughts on
that.
She's someone that's, a lot of the Bernie base, if you like, quite like. What do you think about her chances? I mean, there is a debate here.
I think it's really interesting what JC was saying in terms of... don't do that because it'll be patronising. I mean, so it's important, obviously, to get as many of the supporters of Sanders out there and voting, but they tend to be concentrated in places that aren't, in a normal year, necessarily that electorally crucial. So, you know, the strongholds of liberalism in the US, I think even if there wasn't that much motivation, isn't going to necessarily hand the election to Trump, or you shouldn't be overly worried about it. I think the reason for wanting to appoint someone like Elizabeth Warren is... as VP, would be along the lines that Clinton was saying of, like, actually, is that the future centre of gravity of the party, a more progressive female, sort of doubling down on the strengths that actually Hillary in many ways brings to the ticket, of saying, look, Hillary's tact, I think most people would agree with, has through this election, whether through choice or through Sanders, tacked the left, and that the centre of gravity of the Democratic Party is to the left of where it was in, say, 2004, when and around then when Hillary was running for Senate and so on. Now, if that would be a recognition that that's the sort of the new reality, and that, you know, Trump is essentially going to be running against the new Democrats of the Clinton era. So what are the new Democrats doing? And maybe they are more progressive and they are more like Elizabeth Warren. Or the alternative for me is someone like the governor, who I think is Jay Nixon, the governor of Missouri, who is, you know, famously a swing state. You know, it's literally the border is, what, just north of the Mason-Dixon line? So it's, you know, sort of the boundary
Clinton
between
Nixon
the north
has
and
a
the
sort
state.
Of unfortunate ring to it.
Well, sure, but and I'm not saying, and I know nothing yeah. about him, but like more like someone of that ilk, who is a governor of a, for the sake of argument, you know, borderline red state, and who would potentially be appealing to a kind of that kind of swing Reagan Democrat type audience and motivate and at least give them sort of cause to question whether like this kind of new Democrat kind of ticket is the thing for them or whether actually they want to throw the lot in with Trump. But a huge amount of it will depend on the dynamics of, so if Sanders gets in line and gives a fairly, you know, clear, you know, support to it. And if Elizabeth Warren, I mean, the alternative is that you more or less announce that you're going to put Elizabeth Warren on the Supreme Court, or what, you know, there's all sorts of things that you can do to signal your intent without necessarily making her a VP pick.
Let's go to the Republic. I mean, as an aside on Elizabeth Warren, it's noticeable that she's been attacking Donald Trump quite strongly, isn't it? And one of the roles that the vice president candidate usually has is the attack dog, and that's quite interesting.
May I just throw my thought in on Elizabeth Warren? I can hear Donald Trump sharpening his knives. He cannot wait to have her on the ticket.
He called her Pocahontas, didn't he?
Indeed. But here's what you need to understand. That's red meat to his audience. They love that. Mm. They're a huge bloc who are so fed up with philosophical stuff. They're fed up with political correctness. They're fed up with their money being taken away. They're fed up, as they are in the UK, some. We saw it in a vote that you had, where your mayor was elected by a very strong get-out-the-vote anti-right-wing movement, which was fascinating to me. But he would love to have Elizabeth Warren on that ticket. You could just hear him now. And I think the people that he does toss the red meat to, they would love to hear what he has to say about her. And I think Julian Castro would be a good choice.
It certainly shakes up the map and sort of doubles down on the weakness.
As I said earlier, Hillary has to bring someone in who's exciting, who can change the dynamic and say, my God, isn't that great? Hillary's great. She's great diplomat. She'll be a solid president. But look who brought in. I mean, my God.
We've only got about 5 minutes left, so I want to go on to the Republicans and maybe do some sort of closing remarks on the actual on November and what might happen.
Sure.
Get your views on that, JC. But the betting odds suggest Jeff Sessions and Newt Gingrich are the two favourites, and then there's a suite of candidates who are as well 10-1 and beyond. Now, again, with the caveat that, you know, betting odds aren't necessarily predictive in terms of who Donald J. Trump is going to pick as his running mate. I mean, what do we think of those people, JC? And, you know, Chris Christie's there at 16-1, who was a very sort of early backer of the Donald, wasn't he? So, I mean, what do you think about his choices, both in terms of what's he going to be thinking about when he makes that choice? And are there any people you think we should be looking out for?
Well, it's a great question. I don't think Newt has a chance. He's got a background that will not help Trump, let's put it that way. And I like Newt. He's a brilliant, brilliant politician. He's a smart man, and he really knows politics and history, which most people don't anymore. I like Kelly Ayotte. I like the concept of Bob Corker. He's got experience. Trump needs to bring in someone who's actually run something beside a business, like a state, who has legislative expertise. He's a senator, member of Congress, get things done, knows how to do government. And I also find it so in your face, but also kind of interesting and fun, and would probably love his constituents would probably love it, his supporters. I like Chris Christie. He's run New Jersey, and it's so in your face Like, you don't like it? Tough. I'll take my ball and I'll walk off the court. That's what they do in Queens. And he could pull that. I also like Nikki Haley. And there's some good individuals on this list Ledbrook's folks put together. Mm. And I think Trump can take his time and choose somebody. But he needs to choose someone who's got some real expertise, because if he's always remember, we were talking about this earlier, if you're not there, that person's the president.
Mm. I mean, it seems to me that we're talking about energy, energizing
excitement
for Hillary, yep, and experience for Trump.
Yes,
I mean, let's talk about November in a final closing remark from both of you. We've only got a couple of minutes left. But, I mean, Rob, you know, what are we looking out for going into November? I mean, I won't make you make a prediction in terms of who's going to be the president, but you know, what are the things that you think that we should be keeping an eye out for and that could tip the balance of the race one way or the other?
So, well, the VP picks is a really, really fundamental bit. I mean, I talk about it in three stages, really. The first stage is what Sanders does in terms of, you know, how the outcome of his meeting with Obama is. And if that comes out as a kind of consensus, rally the troops, we end up with a convention where, like in 2008, Bernie Sanders stands up and says that, you know, she should be nominated by acclamation, and there's cheering and the balloons go off and everybody's like one happy family, then that sets a very different dynamic to, I don't think he'll run as a third party, but certainly you end up in a situation, you could end up with a very different dynamic, certainly in terms of the media narrative, if not necessarily in terms of the ground game. So that's the first bit. Second bit will then be the VPs and when they're announced and which order they go through. And then the third piece will be this ground game of whether we see this sort of interaction between the organizing power of, in effect, the third election in a row for a team of really, really competent people, both on the kind of literal ground game, but also in terms of the analytics and the social media and that kind of bit, where genuinely there is no one else in the world, I think, in terms of who has that kind of capability. The Republicans are getting there, but they know that they're playing catch up on a lot of that stuff. And whether Trump can, in a sense, play the same card that he played in the primaries of this kind of, you know, capture of the media narrative, you know, free coverage, you know, just being able to drive the news agenda, putting everyone else off their game, ensuring that everybody else is playing catch up with him. I think that will be the most important dynamic. And part of that will be, you know, will be decisive come November, because I think in the VP picks, you fundamentally got decisions about which direction you want to go. Are you securing your base and making sure that they turn out? So someone like Jeff Sessions, you know, senator from Alabama, is like a nod to like, look, don't worry, we've got a proper Southern conservative on the ticket.
Knowledgeable.
Yeah. Don't think for a second that this group of people is going to make crazy wacko decisions in the way that Trump has made it in this campaign. Like, this is a good Southern, you know, good solid kind of thing. And, you know, or on the flip side, you could go with someone like Christie. It's like, let's double down on it. Some brash Northeasterners who are going to shape the, you know, stuff up, and hang it, we can afford to lose, I don't know, wherever it might be, Texas, because we're going to win New York and we're going to win New Jersey and we're going to win California for that matter, right? And the Democrats have got a not totally dissimilar kind of conundrum.
Final word to JC. What does this election hinge on in terms of who actually emerges as the president?
I'll quote Prime Minister Macmillan in three words: events, events, events. And the dynamic between the vice presidential candidate and the principal, the president. We all know that JFK was not very fond of LBJ, but it was LBJ who put most of his legislation through. We know that Ike wasn't a big fan of Dick Nixon. He said, what did Nixon ever do? He says, I don't know, give me a couple of days and I'll think of something. I mean, there's that dynamic. So when you see the dynamic, Al Gore and Clinton, my God, they look like the hot boys. You know, they were two hotties from the South. You couldn't beat them. That's important. And Joe Biden and Obama were a good team. You're going to see that dynamic. You also, and when I get back to events, Trump is coming here in 2 weeks' time. He's going to be opening his big mouth around the vote, Brexit vote, and he could make a major international guffaw, which he's known to do. It depends on how close people are watching, how close what people really care about, and can he sustain it? Now, Hillary, on the other hand, we don't know. Hillary knows what we don't know about every issue that has come up earlier, whether it's the emails or the Benghazi or anything, or the background in Arkansas, all of that. Hillary knows everything. There may be issues, there may not be. Rob said it's probably everything has come up already on Hillary imaginable. However, just remember, You know this very well. You know American politics. What happens on the 28th of July when the crescendo is reached by the opposition research people, when they say, well, wait a second, sorry, there's your candidate, now I'm going to unleash stuff you would never even believe? That's a fear that the Clinton people may have. I don't know. I'm not saying there is. Events for her and events for Trump and the VP is important, but I think the dynamic and how those two candidates appear on TV and in interviews, they need to do interviews, they need to do a lot more interviews, and how that will play out in November, because the world is watching.
Well, I could talk about this all night, but unfortunately that's all we've got time for. John Christopher, thank you very much for your time. Rob, as usual, it's been a pleasure. And that's all we've got time for this week's politicalbetting.com Polling Matters show. Certainly a very exciting race that we'll be keeping an eye on between now and November. Join us next week when we'll be talking again about Brexit and the EU referendum polling. It seems all over the place that the debate seems to be moving towards Leave, but is that true? We'll have more, all of that and more next week. So join us then.